Welcome to Home Ground. I'm Brian Kahn. There are more than 1.5 million inmates in prison in the United States, the highest per capita population of any major nation. The large majority have been convicted of more than one offense, and a majority of those released will end up in prison again. A major cause of that is the lack of jobs for former inmates. All this is terribly costly. In tax dollars, $74 billion in 2007, and in damaged and in wasted lives. So it's fair to ask, can anything be done about it? Montana's Department of Corrections thinks so. And here to discuss it are Gail Lambert, Montana Correctional Enterprises Administrator at the State Prison at Deer Lodge, and Robert Dwayne Smith, a parolee, and Brian German, an inmate. Many thanks to you all for joining us on Home Ground. Gail, let's start with you. Where did you grow up? What did your folks do?
Brian, I grew up in Deer Lodge, Montana. My dad actually retired from the prison after 28 years of service, and my mom was a state worker.
I was going to ask you why you entered correctional service, but that sounds like there's a family connection that's pretty direct.
Actually, I swore I would never work for the correctional service program.
Why do you?
It was by accident. I think everybody gets into corrections by accident. I was an accountant, and I came out to the Department of Corrections in an accounting position and just kept going, and now here I am.
How long have you been here?
I'm actually starting my 17th year.
All right. I'm going to suspect, listening to you talk and knowing you're a competent person, you could be doing something else after 17 years. So why are you still here?
You're right. I could be doing something else, but I believe in what I do wholeheartedly. I believe I'm very passionate about the work and training programs, and I'm passionate about helping people change their lives and come back to society.
Robert, where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
Grew up in Columbia Falls, Montana. My folks were loggers. Four generations were the loggers from the Flathead Valley. I left there to get out of logging, went to the Marine Corps because I thought it was safer.
That's a heck of a statement. Okay, but let me just stop you there. Now, you said four generations of loggers. Did you log?
No.
Okay, you saw enough of it growing up, and you said you want to do something else.
Correct.
When were you in the Marines?
88 through 96.
Looking back over that period of time, growing up in a logging family and then the Marine Corps, what did you learn that sticks with you that you'd say is of value today to you?
The work ethic and loyalty.
And after the Marine Corps?
Electronics technician, and worked my way into management for an international semiconductor company.
Sounds like an interesting work career.
It was.
And Brian German, what about you? Where'd you grow up? What'd your folks do?
Well, I was an Army brat, so my dad is a JAG officer now. We moved around quite a bit. The longest really I ever stayed in one place was Tacoma, Washington. It's right outside of Fort Lewis.
Do you think that affected you at all? I've interviewed a lot of Army brats, moved around a lot. Some liked it, some didn't.
Yeah, it really did have a profound effect on me growing up.
Good or bad? Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, it was good, but there were some strongly, I guess, negative influences, some hard things that I had to adjust to as a young child, moving around a lot.
For example, what does that mean, some hard things to adjust to?
Well, one of them is that you're always the outsider wherever you go. You don't really belong or fit in anywhere. And I know that stuck with me for a long time afterwards. It really wasn't until I got to be in my mid-20s or maybe even 30 that I really felt like I belonged anywhere. I mean, that's after I came to prison. I don't know what that really says, but a lot of my motivation was to try to, I guess, cover over that or try to find a place where I fit in, a place where I belonged.
Brian, why are you in the Montana State Penitentiary?
In June of 1998, I shot and killed a man in front of my house.
How old were you?
I was 21 at the time.
You're convicted of what?
Of deliberate homicide.
Okay, that's about as serious as it gets.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sitting here across from you. We're at the doing this. I should have mentioned to our listeners at the Deer Lodge Penitentiary. Mm-hmm. You look like a nice young guy, so it's hard for me to square it up. What happened?
I made a series of bad decisions. I got myself involved in the middle of a drug deal, essentially. I played the middleman. I bought some drugs from one guy and brought them to another. And so I owed a friend of mine some money, and he wanted to collect. So he threatened and tried to intimidate me. He came to my home one morning after we got paid at work and demanded the money, and I wouldn't give it to him. I thought that he was going to do more than he actually was going to. And
so you killed him?
Yes, I came out of my house with my shotgun to defend myself and my family. And
okay, but you're convicted of murder, not self-defense. So do you in your heart of hearts acknowledge that you murdered this man?
Yeah, definitely. I killed an unarmed man. I completely misread the situation and committed an irretrievable act.
So you've been in prison here how long?
A little over 15 years.
And your sentence was?
75 years altogether.
With eligibility for parole potentially?
Yes, after almost 19 years.
Okay, let me ask you this, and I regret to say we don't have time to discuss this in the depth that it warrants.
Right.
Seems to me you have a choice when you come into prison. You can just do your time, or you can sort of maybe look at what you did, why you did it, and try to make some changes. Which has it been for you?
Yeah, there's absolutely that choice. I've seen that over the years. Some people don't do anything to better themselves. They just want to sit here until they get out. I've spent years from a very short time after I got locked up analyzing myself and looking at the string of choices and the consequences that those choices had that got me to the point where I could kill a man. And I've tried to, I guess, reverse those decisions, try to see how I went wrong and how I could get back onto a path that would be considered right by most people.
If somebody is listening to this show and says, "Those are nice words. How do I know whether to believe this young man or not?" What would you say to them?
I'd say that's a hard question to answer, and I think it really, you know, exemplifies the whole debate about rehabilitation, mm-hmm. that it's hard to look at somebody and see what their character is. And I think really probably the only good measure of a man's character is what he does consistently over a period of time.
And if you were to say to the listener what you've done over a period of time to carry that out, what would you say? In prison, what have you done?
I think part of the answer for that is that I've worked consistently for most of the time that I've been in prison. Part of the answer would be that I have gone out of my way in a lot of cases to try to help people who are around me come to terms with what they've done and where they are. And another part of it is that I've worked hard to maintain my relationships with my family, to be a good husband to my wife, be a good father to my son.
You're listening to Home Ground, and this is Brian Kahn. We're at the Deer Lodge State Prison talking to a parolee, an inmate, and the administrator of the Montana Correctional Enterprises Program. Robert Dwayne Smith, when we left off in our brief conversation earlier, you were a manager in a semiconductor company?
Correct.
How'd you end up in prison here?
I drank after several years of sobriety and during a blackout drunk committed some very horrendous acts.
What were you convicted of?
Sexual intercourse without consent.
Was drinking a long-term problem for you?
Yes.
Going back how far?
Looking back now to my teenage years.
What was your sentence and how long did you serve?
I had a sentence of 20 years with 10 years suspended, and I served 7 years of the 10 years.
I have some personal association through an earlier marriage with alcoholism. It's a very difficult problem, to put it mildly. You're out of prison now. How is it going for you?
Going very well. I stay very active with sober people. I'm spending a lot of my weekends with them, either camping or cooking out.
You a pretty good cook?
Well, I can do all right.
Go back to your time in prison. I've really never talked with someone in any depth who had a drinking problem or was alcoholic about what life in prison is like in terms of whether it helps, doesn't help, has any impact on that condition. What was your experience here?
For the drinking,
yes,
aspect of it, I would say that remaining idle makes you want to more.
To drink more. Okay, so in prison, I don't know if you were idle or if you were working or what. What happened here?
I worked here.
Doing what?
I worked at the MCE Corrections Food Factory.
MCE is the abbreviation for this?
Montana Correctional Enterprise.
Okay, tell me about your work.
I was the clerk there. I did bill ladings. I did printed out the recipes. I did all of the, I did paperwork for them.
How many hours a week on average, as you described?
40.
40 hours a week.
Correct.
And in terms of this issue of drinking, which obviously is more complicated than not having enough to do, but just looking at the work aspect, do you feel that helped you, didn't help you, helped you a lot? What would you say and why?
I would say that it helped because it allowed me to have life, you know, have some value to my life, some importance to it.
You say value and importance. That sounds like value and importance that you give to your life or that other people give to your life.
That I give to my own.
Is that an issue for you?
It is, because if I don't feel that I'm contributing, I tend to get depressed, place less value on my life, lower self-esteem.
Any thought where that came from? I mean, just going back to what you told us earlier, logging family, Marine Corps, the Marines are known for, let me put it this way, and I've had close Marine friends, tearing down one thing but building up something else, and the people that I know that have gone through the Marine Corps have a pretty strong sense of purpose and teamwork, etc. I'm hearing you say that wasn't enough for you in some respect.
Correct. It's something in me that I need the satisfaction of the job. It's a personal need for me. Once I left the food factory, I went to lumber processing here and did the clerk for there. That's
a part of the program here. You can do lumber processing.
Correct.
What are you doing now that you're on parole?
Actually, I met one of the men that brings lumber in to be processed here, and at my parole, he offered me a job, and I'm a freight broker for him now.
How long have you been on parole working in that job?
3 months.
How is it so far?
Going great. Loving it.
Gail, I'm going to ask you about this Montana Correctional Enterprises program, and first I want to start by reading its mission statement. It says it provides employment and training opportunities to offenders, which enhances public safety, promotes positive change in offender behavior, reintegrates offenders into the community, and supports victims of crime. Now, that's a pretty tall order for a corrections program. That's my sense. How would you boil it down? What do you see in your work that makes you, you said earlier, you're still here because you want to be here, you believe in it? Why?
I think our mission statement summarizes the whys. These men and women are going to get out. They're going to come back to our communities. They're going to come back and be our neighbors, our coworkers, and it's my responsibility to give them the tools necessary to succeed when they do that. Public safety, people think of it as public safety, keeping them locked up, making sure nobody's hurt. But public safety also means creating fewer victims so that when they get out, they're prepared and there is less victimization. Victims of crime, again, fewer victims. And inmates who work, they feel a purpose, they are paying restitution. Our program offers so many different opportunities for offenders to improve their lives, to change their thought processes, and to become the citizens that we need them to be when they're released from prison.
All right, let's break it down. What are the employment opportunities? What are we talking about, employment and training opportunities? Specifically, what do you offer here?
Brian, we have 22 different business units. They can work in a laundry. They can learn mechanics, computer science, lumber processing. We offer a certification program where they can become a certified lumber grader that's recognized throughout the Northwest or throughout the United States.
Let me just ask a question at that point. Do you have any data that shows that if they get this certification that there's a pretty good chance that they're getting a job? Because there's prejudice against hiring felons former or current, whatever you want to call it. Does this actually work? Does it get people jobs? I see Robert moved like maybe he was a beneficiary of that.
I've had the opportunity to go lumber grade, but the job opportunity I've got now, because I gained my certification while I was here.
Any data more broad in terms of the percentage of employed people in any way that says to somebody this stuff works?
Most of the data I have right now is more anecdotal. We have inmates that write to us. We know that they get jobs. We know they get good paying jobs. There are people who don't want to hire felons, but most in the lumber industry, that doesn't stop them. Probably the data that I'm the most proud of is that inmates who do work in our program after 1 year, who train or have some sort of work assignment with us, recidivate 28% less than those who do not. That's millions of dollars of savings to our taxpayers.
Okay, I'm just going to go over this again. Promotes positive change in offender behavior. That's a phrase that I read from your mission statement. What does that mean in real human terms?
Well, you've heard these two gentlemen here speak about the positive changes they have. They're learning interpersonal communication skills. They're learning to take accountability. And we have some cognitive-based programs where they're learning to think differently.
Okay, help me understand. Cognitive-based programs is a phrase I don't understand.
It's changing your thought process. Many of these men were raised to think that they would not, and women, that they wouldn't turn out to be anything, and they proved their parents right, which is wrong. They need to think of themselves as successful to move towards that success.
That sounds like some sort of motivational training in my language. Fair?
Fair.
Robert, does any of that make any sense? In other words, I'm saying it sounds like fairly ambitious language, maybe optimistic language, part of your real-world experience here in Deer Lodge, or not?
It makes perfect sense to me because I, like the rest of the world, had my beliefs about sex offenders and still held those.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that made me less than a bad man. And some of these programs...
By less, you mean lower than?
Lower than low. And to me, these programs taught me there's a difference between, I guess, that I'm not just a bad man, but I'm a good man that's done some bad things. And that was the big moment for me.
Why does that matter to you, that you're a good man that's done bad things rather than a bad man?
In my head, there's a huge difference between that. Because a bad man, there is no purpose for. A good man can make the living amends, can try to do the best for the rest of his life. But a bad man, there is no rehabilitation.
I'm looking at a letter that was given to me that you wrote thanking the Montana Correctional Enterprises, I guess, on your leaving Deer Lodge. It refers to the STEPS program, STEPS, as relevant to this question of your assessment of who you are. What's the sum of that? How does it work? What do you learn from it?
Basically, what you learn from it is to look forward at your goals. Don't look at the obstacles, because as soon as you start focusing on the obstacles, that's where you're going to go. Look at the goal. You'll achieve the goal.
And is this done through a professional facilitator, other inmates, alone, one-on-one? What's the deal?
I sat through it probably 5 different times. Some was prison staff facilitated it, mm-hmm. and several other times it was inmate facilitators.
You're listening to Home Ground, and I'm Brian Kahn. We're at the Deer Lodge State Penitentiary talking about the Montana Correctional Enterprises Program. Gail, back to you. I want to go again back to these words in the mission statement. Reintegrates offenders into the community. Now, what's your sense for how well that's happening? Obviously, we have two men here. One is still in prison. One is on parole. They were picked by your office. They're very articulate men. How well does it work, broadly speaking, your program to reintegrate people into the community?
I think, Brian, that you can go back to that statistic again, that 28% of them, it's 28% less recidivism. So we do help reintegrate they're leaving, they need to have that assistance to step down into the community, whether it's community assistance, our assistance, the assistance of their parole officers. Most men and women fail in the first 90 days after they leave here.
Why?
There's many reasons. They go back into the same peer group.
Okay.
They go back to the same habits. And they don't have a job or a place to live. And their addictions or mental health issues. We try to bridge that through our transitional services, through our entry program, which is part of MCE, separate from the jobs. We try to help bridge that gap for a successful transition.
When you say bridge the gap, now you've just listed some heavy stuff. My friends are on the outside. I leave. I go back with my friends. They're criminally inclined, let's say. They deal in drugs. I have an addiction. I have a mental illness. These are not simple things. I have my habits of life, and I'm an adult, so it's not so simple to change. What can you do that bridges that gap?
We can try to get them the assistance they need through mental health professionals, through chemical dependency professionals. We work with their parole officers so they understand the person that they are receiving, not just the file they received, but the person they're actually receiving into their community. We work with employers and the job service to help provide those jobs, and with housing authorities to help provide the housing.
Now, all of that last set of professional interactions suggests to me that there's potentially a receptivity on the other side of the aisle here to the human story of the individual as presented by you. In other words, they're not just saying, to hell with this, felon, end of story. Is that fair in Montana in your experience, that people are open, guarded? How would you describe it?
I believe that people are guarded, and there are some who are open, more of the faith-based community, but we try to reach out with education. They're coming back, and they're going back to the communities in which they came. And once they're done with the Department of Corrections, they need community support to succeed. We understand there's victims, and we'll never forget the victims. These men are coming back. These women are coming back, and we need the community's help to make this work.
Let's talk about the victims. The last phrase in your mission statement, and supports victims of crime. How does this program support the victims of crime?
One of the ways that our program supports victims of crime is through crime victims' payments, and if they do not have restitution to pay, if they're in some of our programs, they have to give a donation to crime victims. We have community work programs. We don't allow the inmates to work in the community until we communicate with the victims. We work hard to do the victim impact panels with our inmates.
I don't know what victim impact panel is.
Victim impact panels are where the felon and the victim sit together, and the victim can talk to them about what it has done in their life.
Is this standard operating procedure?
It's not standard, but we're trying to make it more standard. It's something, there was a bill this last session. Linda Moudry, our public information officer and victim information officer, works very hard to set these up so that we can have these face-to-face to help the victims.
Brian, let's talk about victims. You killed a man.
Yes.
So he's a victim, but there's nothing that can be done by way of amends for him. Are there other victims of your crime?
Yeah, the list is long. It spreads out with an act like that. Obviously, his immediate and his extended family are all victims, but then also his girlfriend that he was living with at the time, and I think she had a child, a little girl that he was fairly close to at the time that I killed him, our coworkers, the people in the community where I committed my crime.
So let's stick with the immediate family, girlfriend.
Right.
One might say, I killed the guy. The way you put it, you felt under threat at the time. You might say that's the way it goes. Or you might say, okay, well, if you don't feel that way, how do you feel? And more fundamentally, what do you do about it? What can you possibly do about it?
I don't know that there's anything that I can do except really do my time and not complain about it. And that's one of the big things that I've tried to do. I wish that there was something that I could do, and I've thought over the years about ways that I could maybe try to lessen their grief. But when you're coping with the loss of a loved one, I don't know that there is really much that can be done by an outside person, especially by the person who caused that loss.
Let me ask you two guys about that. I think for most of us on the outside, at least I would say, I wouldn't expect inmates to spend a lot of time thinking about the victims of their crime. It's a tough environment. You got things to deal with. Am I wrong?
Yes, Barry. Most of the guys in my 7 years in here think a lot about their victims and their victims' family and how they affected their lives.
Are they encouraged to do that, or that just is their human response? What would you say?
For most people, it's a human response in many of the groups. And through some of the leadership here, it is encouraged to look at ways to improve yourself so you don't create more victims.
I am surprised to hear you say that, just in one sense. My dealings with prisons are somewhat extensive. My experience in California was there was a lot of denial among felons saying, I didn't really do it, I got a bum rap, etc. That would argue against that there was really a victim. But you're saying no, people accept their crime and that they, what are we talking about?
I'm saying yes, most people accept their crime. I can name, out of the 7 years I was here, two people that I know. And I don't know everybody that's in the prison, but I can name two people that I know of that say that they're here and shouldn't be.
What's your experience, Brian?
I think that that's a more complicated question than it seems on the surface when you're talking about motivations, because we have motivations that exist on different levels. And so I think that a lot of people that I've met over the years were willing to admit to close friends or other people that they felt responsible and felt feelings of guilt and grief over their crime. But when talking to strangers or when talking to other people, they have defense mechanisms that come up that take over because they can't adequately deal with those feelings of grief and guilt. And so then they project this other facade, is what it is. And a lot of times that I'm not guilty, I didn't do this.
But you're
I'm
saying
not a
deep
bad
down
person.
They know it. They accept it.
I think it's undeniable in most cases, yeah.
Gail, you've been here 16, 17 years. How does that sound to you, what you just heard?
Brian, I don't think that these two individuals are different than most of the inmates that are in prison. I think that most people want to, they don't want to just do their time. They want to do their time better. They want to improve their lifestyle. They want to improve the person that they are. They don't want to leave here the same person that they came in. I think that these two are just an example of many men and women that are incarcerated that are good people that made bad decisions. Not that there aren't bad people out there, because we have our share of them. But I believe that given the right tools in their toolbox, that most of them will use those tools to succeed.
Gail Lambert, Robert Delane Smith, and Brian German, I very much regret to say we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for being with us on Home Ground. And to our listeners, many thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us next week. Home Ground is an independent production of Artemis Common Ground and does not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station. Post-production by Valtron Recording Studios. We welcome your ideas for new programs at www.homegroundradio.org. Home Ground is made possible by grants from the Liz Claiborne Art Ortenberg Foundation, Cinnabar Foundation, Humanities Montana, and the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication about issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans.